The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center, Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
My name is Gail Iverson, and I'm filling in for Mark tonight. He's on a retreat up at Arrow River near Thunder Bay, and he will be back next Friday. So we're going to continue for the last number of weeks. We've been talking about the seven factors of enlightenment, and tonight we're going to continue on that topic. And the topic, we're on the sixth factor, which is concentration. So just to review briefly, we started out talking about mindfulness. That's the first factor. And mindfulness is the moment-to-moment awareness of our experience, opening to it without judgment and without interference. So mindfulness is the factor that balances the mind. Then the next three factors of enlightenment, which are energy, investigation, and rapture, those are arousing qualities. They bring energy to the practice. So investigation, we investigate the nature of our experience. We don't take it for granted. We don't take it for granted that we are actually, well, so often we're on automatic pilot. And we're not actually aware of our experience, what's happening in the moment. So we bring to this, to our meditation and to our daily activity, we bring this sense of it's not a trying to figure things out, but it's more of a reflective attitude towards experience, not trying to get an answer, but really to keep inquiry alive. So investigation is this willingness to and this interest in knowing what's true, to knowing experience as it actually is. The next factor is rapture, and this is having an interest, a joy, and delight in our experience. In his book, which I've forgotten the title of for the moment, Jack Kornfield's book, thank you, A Path with Heart. Not with mind, with heart, anyway. He says, it's learning to live and practice with a light heart. The quality of rapture is an ease and openness of the mind that receives with interest every kind of circumstance. I was listening to some tapes a while ago by Pema Chodron entitled Awakening Compassion. And she's very much emphasizes this, bringing this curiosity to our practice and to our daily life. And so she said, to bring, it's an interest in everything. It's not excluding anything. I mean, we are obvious that we have interests in things, but she said, so, you know, like when we're walking down the street, we can notice like the patterns of the There's interesting patterns on the sidewalk, just the way the there's kind of like little stones and grains and things. And we don't, you know, generally we are thinking about where we're going when we're walking down the sidewalk, or maybe we're thinking about something that happened in the past. So she was really emphasizing this thing of being interested in what was happening in the present. And she also said, like, for instance, when you flush the toilet, you should be interested on whether it's going to go down or up. Have that kind of not taking things for granted. So that, I don't know, that really struck me as, I mean, that is really bringing a lot of curiosity to our daily activity. And, you know, it's just kind of a thing of not taking things so seriously, but just having this kind of playful curiosity. So those are the three arousing, energizing factors. There's investigation, effort, and I think I failed to talk about effort. So effort is this intention to be continuously mindful of our experience. Whatever is happening at the moment, we just bring this gentle kind of effort to an intention to be as continuously aware as we can. And of course, it takes a lot of practice. This brings in this willingness to begin again over and over again. But that's the intention. So those are the three arousing qualities of the seven factors: investigation, effort, and rapture. And then the next three qualities are stabilizing qualities, and those are tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. So tranquility arises when we are willing to let go of controlling things. And once that we, after we have developed this interest and curiosity, then there's kind of a stabilizing, quieting aspect that that can arise. This serenity or tranquility. So the next factor that we're going to be primarily focusing on tonight is concentration. And we touched on, you know, some of the aspects of developing this in the meditation tonight. I was listening to a talk recently by Gil Fronsdal, and he was kind of comparing mindfulness and concentration sometimes in practice. Some teachers will emphasize concentration more and some teachers will emphasize mindfulness more. He talked about this partnership of mindfulness and concentration, and he said that when the Buddha talked about concentration, he often used images, or he often used the verb of to touch, of touching. That was, his images had more to do with touching things. And when he talked about mindfulness, he more often used the verb of seeing. And actually, if we look at the definitions of the Pali words for this seeing and for mindfulness and for concentration, we can see that their roots relate to this seeing and touching. In Vipassana, passana means seeing, and vi means through. So it's this idea of seeing things clearly, of seeing through things, of seeing things as they actually are. And samadhi, which is the Pali word for concentration, sama means to stand, and di means with. So this is for the idea of the standing with, of being composed, having a stability, and having actually in the Christian religion, they use a word recollection, and it doesn't mean remembering or thinking about things from the past. It means to recollect the mind. So the mind has a habit of being scattered, and so with this recollection we bring it back. We concentrate it. We compose it. So that's samadhi has this quality of composure and stability. But also sometimes when we think of, in English, when we think of the word concentration, we sometimes, you know, kind of think of knitting our brow and like really sort of digging in. But this kind of concentration, it's really more soft and agile. It has a more soft and agile quality to it. Many of the images that the Buddha used when he was talking about concentration had a quality. He used images of water or of moisture, and this is one of the This is one of the things that he talked about. He talked about the He used this image of a lake when he was talking about the developing concentration. And also, right concentration is the eighth step of the Eightfold Noble Path. So here he's talking about really deep concentration, right concentration. He says, just as if there were a lake whose waters welled up from below, having no inflow from the east, west, north, or south, not yet replenished from time to time with showers from the skies, then the cool fount of the lake welling up, the cool fount of water welling up from the lake would make the cool water drench deep, fill and extend throughout the lake, and there would be nothing of the whole lake to which the cool water did not extend. So too, the practitioner makes happiness and pleasure born of concentration drench deep, fill and extend throughout this body, so that there is nothing of the whole body to which they do not extend. So, this deeper levels of concentration, it's this idea of that it pervades the entire body, and that as a result of this, there is a pleasantness and happiness that just naturally arises. When the mind settles down and is not so scattered here and there, it naturally, the natural calmness and balance of it is present. Because the hindrance is what's covering up this natural composure of the mind and this natural happiness, then that's revealed. And there's this pleasantness and happiness that pervades our being. So if we're slanting our practice a little more towards concentration, it's really helpful if we prepare ourselves for practice. That's why, like at the beginning of practice, we can bring some gratitude to mind. Perhaps, as I mentioned, maybe just being grateful for those who have kept the practice alive, or whatever thoughts help to bring that gratitude, because that helps to bring contentment to the mind. And then when the mind has this contentment, then we're more easily able to relax and be composed and to become more concentrated. So just like to read this poem from Mary Oliver, where she talks about gratitude. She says, "The place I want to get back to is where in the pine woods, in the moments between the darkness and first light, two deer came walking down the hill, and when they saw me, they said to each other, 'Okay, this one is okay. Let's see who she is and why she's sitting on the ground like that, so quiet, as if asleep or in a dream, but anyway, harmless.' So they came on their slender legs and gazed upon me, not unlike the way I go out to the dunes and look and look and look into the faces of the flowers. And then one of them leaned forward and nuzzled my hand. 'And what can my life bring to me that could exceed that brief moment? For 20 years I have gone every day to the same woods, not waiting exactly, just lingering. Such gifts bestowed can't be repeated. If you want to talk about this, come to visit. I live in the house near the corner, which I have named Gratitude.'" So, developing this practice of being grateful for, it can be just for the ordinary, we have a lot of just ordinary things in our life that we're just very blessed. And oftentimes we get so busy we don't really reflect on those and bring them to mind. A few years ago I was going through a difficult time in my life, and I decided that each morning I would go out and take a walk, and on that walk I would practice. I would just reflect on, bring to mind things that I was grateful for in my life. And I would just walk in my neighborhood. So I did this for a while, and one day I decided that I would go walk down a different street that I didn't normally walk down. And I walked down this street, and I walked by this house. I don't know if I'd walked by it before, but I had never noticed. In the front yard by the steps, there were two very large statues of Kuan Yin, who is the goddess of compassion. And it was just like, I just felt so grateful for having encountered them, and just sort of a connection. Like, I mean, there was obviously someone else in my neighborhood who was very interested in this kind of love and compassion. And so I could carry that with me. And when I would think about that, things were difficult, that just gave me, brought a real contentment and gratitude to my mind. So if you can think of something, things from your own life that really have touched you, like the deer coming up to Mary Oliver and nuzzling her hand, that can sort of set this tone of contentment and quietude for when we sit down to practice. So we prepare our minds when we're going to do concentration practice. It's really helpful. And then we can prepare our bodies as well. So if we're going to, like for instance, if we're going to meditate in the morning, we can, we might want to do something to energize the body a little bit, so we're not too sleepy when we sit down. So maybe just some stretching, just a few minutes of stretching or whatever kind of exercises helps our body and mind to sort of be alert but also relaxed. If we're going to practice later in the day, it's often good to just take a little time to prepare. Usually, if we've been busy with our daily activities, when we sit down, our minds are tend to be kind of a little more agitated, a little busier. So we can just maybe take a walk around the block before we sit down. That way we don't put so much pressure on our abilities to concentrate. We already have some contentment and some relaxation when we sit down. Then when we do sit down, it can be really helpful to count the breaths. It can help us from drifting away and from sometimes we kind of think that we're more concentrated than we are, kind of fool ourselves. And so by counting the breaths, we really know moment by moment that we're present, and we know when we've drifted away. In some practices, like in Tibetan practice, that's a practice that often develops a lot of concentration, and they'll use visualizations and mudras. They'll move the hands in certain ways, and they also will chant. And those three things brought together can really bring concentration to the mind. So one thing you might want to try that my first teacher, Shinzen Young, taught me and that I found to be helpful is in counting the breath, sometimes I'll just either put my mind, as I'm counting the breath, put my mind in my fingers, just a very slight, or sometimes just a very slight pressure. It's kind of the same thing as a mudra. And that's a kind of a third thing. So we're counting. That's sort of the getting the hearing involved, and with the feeling, we can actually. It's just another anchor that can help us to be present. It kind of depends. Different people have. I'm kind of a kinesthetic person, so. I think that's especially important to me. But, you know, maybe for some people, maybe it's visualizing the numbers or something. But anyway, as much of the mind as we can involve in this process can really be helpful in establishing our concentration. And but also, it's kind of like it's not like we're exactly either trying to get concentrated. That can cause more tension, but we're sort of doing these things so that we're setting the stage so that concentration is most likely to happen. So each time that we exhale, there's a relaxation that occurs in the body, and we can be aware of this relaxation filling our whole body. And this is pleasant, and this awareness helps to relax the body and the mind. And when we are relaxed and present, then there's a gladness that arises, and we can dwell there. With this continuous being with the breath, the negative, unwholesome mind states don't arise, or if they do arise, they can be more quickly let go of. So we have this one-pointed focus. For instance, we've chosen the breath as our object of meditation, but it's not, I mentioned, clinging or forcing the mind. It's a gentle resting there and creating this stability. And it's a willingness to let go of everything except the movement of the breath in the body. So we let go of sounds, and we let go of thoughts, and we let go of other sensations in the body. And we cultivate this gentle and happy, peaceful clarity with the process of breathing in and out. Each breath arises and passes away, and we can celebrate this aliveness of the world of breathing. So, and even if sometimes if the breath feels tight or is shallow or it's a little uncomfortable, there still be this quality of relaxation at the end of the exhalation. And we can tune into that, and that pleasantness at the end of the exhalation can bring us to a more relaxed, pleasant place. So we're willing to let go of our normal way of planning and judging and remembering. And we don't really miss out on anything by not thinking about the past or the future for this period of time. The practice clears and stabilizes the mind so that we can, when we go back to our normal activity, we can bring a clarity and a new perspective to our situation after this period of practice. And we, oftentimes we can have a more, it can help us to have more creativity, offer us more options will arise in the mind. So we're not really losing anything by giving up our planning and judging or whatever our habits of mind are doing. So there are also some things that we can do in our daily life that will help us to be more prepared when we sit down to meditate, that will help us to be more concentrated. One thing we can practice, we can sort of make some choices to bring to our daily living, is we can choose gradually to maybe give up doing multitasking and to just to do one activity at a time. So perhaps when we're driving the car, from time to time, we can just drive the car rather than turning on the radio or or thinking about where we're going or where we've been. We can just bring our mind to the actual driving of the car. So there's basically just three things that are involved. We're seeing, we're hearing, and we're feeling. And we can just, whenever the mind starts to think about where we're going or where we've been or just things, thoughts that aren't involved with the actual activity of driving, we can gently let go of those and refocus our mind just on the seeing, hearing, and feeling that's present in that particular activity. A couple of weeks ago, I'm of the age now where I get a discount on my on my insurance, my car insurance, if I take a defensive driving class. So I took this defensive driving class. Actually, I wasn't looking too much forward to it. I thought it was going to be boring, but the man who taught it was really quite good. It turned out to be quite an interesting, pleasantly surprised. But one of the things that he talked about, one of the things that they recommended was to look in your mirrors every 3 to 5 seconds. Look in your rear view and your side view mirrors. And I had heard that, many years ago, I think I had heard that. And I remember at the time thinking, well, that would just be agitating. You're constantly looking. But this time I heard and I thought, well, that would be an interesting thing to try. And so for the last couple of weeks, I've been doing that when I drive, just looking every few seconds. And it's amazing how relaxing that is. Because you are just present. Moment by moment, you're just present with the driving, but also your awareness is greater, because I'm always aware of the cars that are coming up beside me. I drive about 20 minutes to work in the morning on 94, I'm heading east, so I'm not stopped in traffic. So there's a lot of times when, you know, the cars are passing me. And I just always am aware now. And I really, for the last couple of weeks, I've gotten to work more relaxed than I ever have been. So that's one, you know, just one example. You can think of many activities where, you know, we're doing more than one thing at a time. Eating is another thing that we can practice this with. I know it's my habit to read something, but more and more, if I have an opportunity, if I'm not eating with other people, I'm by myself, just to be present with the activity of eating. It's really very pleasant. We don't, so much the time when we're doing other things, we don't even really taste the food. It's just sort of going in as we're digesting other thoughts and feelings. Something that can be helpful in terms of developing concentration, preparing for our actual sitting meditation, is to do it at the same time and place. This sort of the mind, that helps to compose the mind to have this kind of constancy. So just this repetition of the same time and the same place, and also if we haven't established a regularity of practice, this can really be helpful too, of we know that when it's this time, that then it's time for us to meditate. And the place too, if we can have a place where it's where the environment is orderly, that can also be a help to the mind. Also, preparing by doing some kind of chanting or ritual, that can also help some people, especially if you have a more devotional nature, bent to your nature. Just chanting. I know I did a retreat many years ago with Bhante Gunaratana, and he always started meditation practice with a metta chant. And that can really be helpful in setting this stage of contentment for the mind also, just to, and just for a few minutes to develop this quality of loving kindness. But it's also really important not to be focused on results or to be trying to gain something. Just to, because sometimes it, and especially for different people, sometimes the concentration, you know, might practice for quite a long time, and the concentration doesn't become very deep, but that's not a problem, because there is some movement in that direction. And in order to do this practice, we don't have to have this deep concentration, but it can just be helpful to just to make the practice more pleasant, and so that we're more interested in doing it. The after the Buddha, when he started his practice, he was doing very strict ascetic practices, and he had almost, the idea then was to subdue the body through, through eating very little and sleeping very little and moving very little. And so, but he realized that after a time that this wasn't going to actually bring the complete freedom and liberation that he was seeking. And so he remembered a time when he was a child and he had been sitting, his father was, the king was doing a harvest ritual for the opening of the, for the beginning of harvest. And he was sitting under a rosewood tree and he was watching this. And he just remembered how he had been relaxed and just kind of very gently aware of what was going on, but really not exactly focusing on anything or thinking anything. And he kind of wondered if, he just remembered this very pleasant state that he had been in. And so he wondered if perhaps that wasn't more of the direction. He didn't need some of more of that in his search for this freedom and liberation. And that is what he ended up practicing more. A number of years ago, Bert, my first teacher, Shinzen Young, told this story about how he, when he was 22, he went to live in this monastery in Japan to train as a monk there. And he was young, and he was curious. Meditation master, he kind of wondered what did the meditation master do when he had spare time. And so he had this opportunity to spy on him one day, and so he watched what he was doing, and he was sitting in his room, and he was just looking at his, just holding his bell in his hand and looking at it. And Shinzen watched him for, wasn't quite sure how long, but for 10 minutes anyway. And that was the activity that he was doing, was just absorbed in his, looking at his bell. And Shinzen was, was kind of surprised, but when the mind is content and at ease, it's really this internal. So much of our energy is put out into our external activity, into manipulating conditions and to getting the conditions to be the way that we want them. And of course, as lay people, in order for our lives to continue, we have to have a certain amount of focus on doing that. But we could kind of reflect and see if there needs to be that much focus on our activities, or if we couldn't balance it a little bit more to from time to time perhaps looking at our bell or whatever, just some kind of simple activity that that we can be at ease with, this simplified, unified activity of mind. Thank you. I remember as a child that there was this. I shared a room with my brother, and I was quite young. I was probably about 5 or so, and I can remember there was this spring on the crib that would, if you put it at the top, it would spin down like that. And I can remember, I don't know how long I would, but I can just remember sitting there and like spinning that and watching. And maybe you can remember some activity as a child, just some simple activity like that. And I can remember just being totally contented to sit there and do that over and over again. It was just very relaxing, and I just completely content to be there. And so sometimes we can think back to our childhood, to a time when we had this kind of contentment and simplicity that can help us to be more interested in practicing doing this practice of concentration. Because a lot of times, like with the breath, sometimes we can feel that it's boring. It's just so repetitive. And but if we can really open to the world of the breath, it can be tranquilizing and pleasant, and it can the mind can be quite happy doing a simple activity like being aware of the breath. With one more poem from Mary Oliver. This is called When I Am Among the Trees. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the birch, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches, and they call again. "It's simple," they say, "and you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine."